And welcome back to Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper's on vacation. Today we consider sustainable versus organic farming with author, syndicated columnist, Cordon Bleu chef, and our friend, Linda Gassenheimer. Good afternoon, Linda. Welcome.
Hello, Bonnie.
Which is better?
You're asking me? We've got experts to tell us.
All right.
So sustainable, organic. You know, we hear a lot about both. What do they really mean? Are they interchangeable? Well, here to give us perspective is John Hilliard. He's the co-owner of Hilliard Bruce Winemakers in California. He uses certified sustainable principles in his vineyard. Welcome, John Hilliard.
Hi.
Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Also with us is Marty Mesh. He's the executive director of Florida Organic Growers. He's going to give us the certified organic perspective. Welcome, Marty Mesh.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Great to have you. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Join in. Do you have any questions for our experts? The number, it's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Do we have email today?
Radio at WLRN.org.
Okay, and the phones are open now. Excuse me. Also, our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. Fred gives the wine suggestions for my Dinner Minutes columns, but he also gives the wine. He also has his wine column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, first, I have lots of questions about this sustainable versus organic, but then I'm also going to talk about what wine to serve at an Easter brunch.
All right. Easter's coming up. Okay, let's start with sustainable farming, John Hilliard. You started out using organic practices in your vineyards. What happened? Why did you change to sustainable?
We started out the first 3 years farming organically because we had a brand new site, and we thought that was the best way to go. And I'm a big fan of the fact that we're talking about both sustainable farming and organic farming, because we're talking about taking care of the earth, and we're talking about people trying to do the right thing. And that's really a wonderful thing that we're up to right now. I really liked the I moved from organic to certified, and I never was certified under the organic program, by the way. We were preparing that.
So you were doing sort of organic style
in order to be certified.
And to be certified, and then you decided to go to sustainable. What happened?
Yes, well, a lot of things. You know, when you're farming grapes, and grapes are kind of a unique crop. So, you know, a lot of the things that we would be using in our organic program required reapplication every 7 days. And when we look at using the products that we can use as a sustainable farmer, we might not have to re-enter the vineyard for 21 days.
So let me just ask you, the products you're talking about, the organic products you're talking about, fertilizers or pesticides, organic ones, you felt you were using them very often, whereas the sustainable ones you were not. But what kind of sustainable product did you use that was acceptable?
Well, there are a lot of reduced, you know, risk pesticides that you can use. And, you know, by the way, you know, we as organic farmers and as certified sustainable farmers, we all use pesticides. We're all using chemicals in our vineyards. You know, as everything, as you know, in the world is a chemical. From our chemistry class in college, we learned that. So we're all using pesticides. It's just what type of pesticides are we using? So, you know, for example, I use the environmental impact quotient to judge what pesticides I'm using. So when I look at insecticidal soap, that's got an environmental impact of 19. Horticulture oils would be 27. Pyrethrums would be 39. Sulfur would be 45. A Bordeaux mixture would be 67. The higher, the worse.
Right. So are those organic pesticides?
Those are typical things that we would be using in a vineyard. And remember, vineyard farming is different from other farmers. It's kind of a specialty crop.
What I'm asking is that, so when you changed from that and you went into sustainable, and I understand there's it's called SIP, Sustainable in Practice Certification, what exactly are you putting on your in your soil?
We would be using synthetic products. For example, we would use Roundup, which has an environmental impact quotient of 15. So you see, that's much lower than many of the products we might be using on in or, when I was doing organic.
Okay, well, let's go on to Marty Mesh and see. Marty, organic, can you just give a quick summary of what you look for when you're certifying organic farming? Just quickly, what are the principles?
Well, organic farming and principles start out with attention to soil, to the health of the soils, and really minimizing, it's really minimizing off-farm inputs. It's trying to control and manage operations through management practices, and then using natural materials and management practices such as, you know, attracting beneficial insects. So farmscaping, you know, what can you plant to attract beneficial insects that might help with certain pest problems? And then if that doesn't work, or if there's a need to, there's a stair-step process that you would use a natural pest control product, could be an insecticidal soap or garlic spray or BT or whatever. And then there are indeed another level of allowed synthetics, and those might be a dormant oil spray, for instance, in fruit crops. But, you know, the first requirement is to start off with management. And can you figure out how to manage your operation in concert with the environment and not use any off-farm input in that case, and then how using the one of least toxic concern, essentially, at best, and trying to figure out your system. And then with soil health, too, it's recycling of nutrients. I mean, John might use synthetic fertilizer now, or, you know, he mentioned Roundup, you know, which is an herbicide that certainly isn't available to organic producers, but, you know, he could be using a synthetic fertilizer in organic production. He would probably be looking at cover crops or, you know, compost or even manure as a side dressing in a vineyard, something like that.
You know, that brings up the question of cost in raising these grapes. Is organic a lot more expensive because of the increased labor that you have to use and that sort of thing? And can you say how many dollars per bottle it might be adding?
Well, I couldn't say how many dollars per bottle, but I would think that the increased labor that we used when we were organic, for example, we would get out and be hand hoeing weeds in the vineyard, whereas now we can zip up and down and knock our weeds back with Roundup. Now, the good thing about using the Roundup is that we don't have to break open the soil. And when you break open your soil, you're reducing your soil structure. You're making your soil less habitable for all the wonderful things that are growing in your soil.
Do you get a lower yield per acre when you go organic as opposed to sustainable?
I don't think in grapes that would be the case.
Let me ask you, John, are you using Roundup or any kind of synthetic because it's easier and faster, you don't have to use it as often, or is it because it's better farming in a sustainable way?
I personally, from the research that I've done, believe that using things like Roundup is actually smarter and it's better for the environment.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, Roundup would allow you to do no-till farming. I mean, for many people, it works great.
Is it possible to say how toxic Roundup is? I hear, you know, it has kind of a reputation, maybe among people who don't know what it is, that as being kind of toxic.
I think that the efforts to try and say that Roundup is toxic have not proven themselves.
Well, what is this environmental impact quotient? How is that determined?
That's I'm not totally familiar with all what goes into it, and but it's what's available for me to try and judge what I'm putting in my field.
Let me ask Marty Mesh, how do we know that our food is truly organic? I mean, what happens if there's an organic farm next to a non-organic farm? There's wind, there's rain, there's pollen, maybe cross-contamination. How can we be sure that we're spending that extra money effort to buy organic that it is.
Well, to be sold on the shelves of the United States, it has to meet the standards of the National Organic Program. And the National Organic Program is a federal program, and as organic farmers, we went to Congress and asked to be regulated so that there would be a uniform definition of organic in the marketplace, and hopefully consumers could have confidence in the label, and that the standards across the country and even internationally would be the same if the product is destined for sale in the United States. And so it's a public process, and citizens can participate in the proposed standard change, and the standards were really painfully long, but were made by conversations between environmentalists, organic farmers, people involved in industries, and we came out with a definition that I think everybody agrees is probably one of the highest, if not the highest, organic standard in the world.
Well, do you believe coming to organic products overall are healthier or more flavorful or better for you or what?
Well, I'll answer that in a second, but I also wanted just to set the context of, I choose not to try to pit farmers against farmers. And so, John, for whatever reason he did, decided to operate his vineyard in a different manner than organic. I'm not here to, we try to meet farmers where they are and encourage them to be more sustainable, in fact. And, the word sustainable has been kind of co-opted on some levels by some people in industry, but I would also venture to say that organic farmers could use practices to make themselves more sustainable as well. And so I think all farms are on the path to looking at their own operation and figuring out how they can farm better as an individual operation.
This is so fascinating. We have hundreds of more questions. We need to go to a break now. I'm sorry. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guests are John Hilliard from Hilliard Bruce Winemakers and Marty Mesh from Florida Organic Growers. We're discussing sustainable versus organic farming. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking about sustainable versus organic farming. Here giving us the perspectives of sustainable is John Hilliard. He's the co-owner of Hilliard Bruce Winemakers in California, talking about how he takes care of his vines carefully. He uses certified sustainable principles. And Marty Mesh, executive director of Florida Organic Growers, giving us the certified organic perspective. And by the way, in conjunction with Earth Week, because Earth Day, of course, is April 22nd, there is a Sustainopia conference here in Miami. It brings politicians, scientists, celebrities from all over the world to Miami Beach Botanical Garden to discuss sustainable topics. That's today and tomorrow. But Saturday, there are family-friendly activities throughout the day. And Easter Sunday, from 1 p.m. to sundown, there's music and bring your own picnic. That's admission free, and it's all about sustainable week. So that's at Miami Beach Gardens, a botanical garden. That's mbgarden.org for more information. So now we're going to dinner in minutes. And let's not leave out the fact that it's Easter coming up this weekend. And this is a quick and easy dinner, perfect for Easter or for any time. It's herb-crusted lamb steak with wild mushroom rice piaf. Now, lamb steak is a steak that's cut right through the leg of the lamb. It makes a round steak with a small bone in the center. It's about an inch thick. I love to use it. It's really simple and easy because you can saute it or broil it and for just a few minutes per side. So for this one, I line a baking tray with foil. That's to make it easier to clean up. Broil the lamb for about 5 minutes. While that's cooking, I mix some garlic and breadcrumbs and dried sage together with a little mustard. Turn the lamb steak over, broil a few more minutes, add the breadcrumbs, another 2 minutes, and it's done. So that's like under 10 minutes, it's done. For the rice piaf, saute some wild mushrooms, some garlic, and rice for a couple of minutes. Add some chicken broth, simmer it, and cover it, and let's just let it be for 15 minutes. So it's really easy. The complete recipe and a photo, it's at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter, at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, are we talking? Can I guess what we're talking about for wine? Fred, are you there? We've lost Fred. Well,
yeah, this is something completely different, I guess. But if you're on a serious social circuit, Easter is the proper time to buy a fancy hat and parade around in it and hold the first major brunch of the season. The problem, though, is that brunches are difficult for wine fans because so many of the popular dishes contain eggs, poached eggs Benedict, casseroles, souffles, and eggs are a problem for wine. They tend to coat the palate and prevent you from tasting the wine, and that's what you really want to do. So one solution is the mimosa, bubbly with orange juice.
It
goes very nicely with these eggy
Didn't
dishes.
We think so, Bonnie?
Absolutely. Fred, bubbly.
Bubbly, absolutely. Vegan bubbly, if I can do it, too. This is very festive as well. But now, you might think that it's easy to make a mimosa, but it really isn't. And since Linda is a graduate of Le Cordon Bleu, I looked up how that famous culinary institution makes a mimosa, and boy, was I impressed. For starters, I'm happy to say that Le Cordon Bleu keenly approves of the mimosa. It praises the way that, and I quote from their website, brought a calm smile to those who try the soft and gentle blend of orange juice and champagne, just waxing lyrical about it. And it has rules for making a mimosa, and I guess this would be a perfect one because there are a lot of rules. First, the perfect ratio for a mimosa is 3 parts champagne to 1 part orange juice. Nothing else will do. Second, you must use freshly squeezed orange juice, and the website says preferably using oranges plucked directly from the tree, which is easy for you to say in Miami, but in Michigan it's a little more difficult. Third, if you have to purchase the oranges from your greengrocer, you have to insist on medium size, firm navel oranges that are evenly formed, and they must be deeply colored. Fifth, you squeeze the juice yourself, and you time the squeezing so you can chill it for no more than a few hours before serving it, because otherwise it might get bitter. Number six, if you insist on cutting corners and buying packaged juice, you have to select the not from concentrate. Number seven, if you have to use concentrate, which tends to be bitter, you might consider adulterating the mimosa with a touch of grenadine, which is a syrup made from pomegranates, to sweeten it. But what's really odd here is that after all this about the orange juice, Cordon Bleu says nothing about the champagne, nothing at all. My own advice, of which I'm sure Cordon Bleu would strongly disapprove, is not to bother using expensive champagne because its aroma and body and flavor will be utterly altered by the juice. So a $20 California sparkling wine or even a $10 Spanish cava will do well. So I don't know, shoot me.
Okay, we're not going to shoot you. Thank you very much for that extensive discussion on how to make a good mimosa.
Now, Linda, you're a Cordon Bleu graduate. Do you make it that way?
I wouldn't adulterate my very good champagne. You know that.
Oh, good.
Adulterate?
Never mind. No, Fred, I haven't made a mimosa. Thank you very much. Okay. But I want to get back to sustainable versus organic.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Right. And here's a question that I have that a lot of people have mentioned this to me. You know, we have the Costcos and the Walmarts and the supermarkets all selling organic produce. Now, I don't think we grow that much organic produce in the United States, so it must be coming in from outside the state. So how is it being regulated, and what are we as consumers to think about this?
I assume that's a question for me, and the answer is that if it's sold as certified organic produce within the United States, it has to meet the USDA National Organic Program standard, whether it's in Oregon or Florida or Hawaii or Mexico or New York. And so anywhere in the world, if it's labeled as certified organic on the shelves of the United States, it's been inspected, audited by an accredited certification program, an ISO compliant certification program to meet the USDA requirements.
So
I did want to I did want to comment on somebody that asked about health stuff, and I serve on something called the Organic Center. If you go search the Organic Center, that's a research center for organic, and there's studies, there are more and more studies that show the environmental benefits, the health benefits of organic on that website.
Okay, well, that sounds wonderful, and I wish we had much, much more time, and I want to thank everybody who's called in that we didn't get to them. It's been really fascinating. We could do a whole week's worth. John Hilliard, thank you so much. It's Hilliard, Bruce Wines, and Marty Mesh, Executive Director of the Florida Organic Growers. Thank you for joining us. Next week, it's Evan Benn with the new food editor for the Miami Herald. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.